Hey, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I'm just popping in to tell you that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. How about a side of New Deal history with your roasted root vegetables and local milk, kids? Last year in Vermont, public school kids ate 7.3 million lunches and more than 4 million breakfasts. About 41,000 kids ate a school lunch every day. That's a lot of meals. And the majority of these meals were served at no cost to the student, either covered by federal funds or a combination of federal and state money. But the history of the school meal program is interesting. And while some advocates want to see free meals for all students in every school, and others think schools shouldn't be burdened with providing food that families should be responsible for, we thought it might be informative to take a bit of a step back and learn more about how school food policy was established and how it's actually implemented in Vermont schools today. Whether you have kids in schools or not, your tax dollars go to fund these programs. And if you have a memory of rubbery tater tots, I do, and pizza that tasted like cardboard from your days in elementary school, you might be interested to hear what school lunches look and taste like today. So joining us now is Rosie Kruger, Assistant Director of Child Nutrition Programs at the Vermont Agency of Education, and Anor Horton, Executive Director at Hunger Free Vermont, an advocacy group focused on education and efforts to eliminate malnutrition and hunger. Rosie and Anor, welcome to Vermont Edition. Nice to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks. It's an honor to be here.
Anor, can you just take us back to when the U.S. started offering meals to public school children? How did that come into place?
Yes. Well, as so many of our social welfare policies do, this does lead us back to the Depression and World War II. And before the 1930s, there were local, privately run efforts to provide school lunches to needy kids. And those took all kinds of different forms. But in the 1930s, with the devastation of the Depression, the U.S. government had two really difficult problems to deal with. And one was high unemployment, and the other was collapsing farm product prices. And so there was a real concern about trying to rescue and save United States farms. And so the government started purchasing surplus food from farmers to keep it off the markets, to artificially keep prices high. And then there was an issue of what they were going to do with that surplus food. And at first, they burned it in fields. And that did not go over very well with the American public, as you can imagine. And so then they realized that there were these school lunch programs that were being operated in a private way that could really use this surplus food. And they began to distribute it. The U.S. Department of Agriculture began distributing it to these locally run school lunch programs. And then as the Depression continued and worsened, relief money also started flowing to these local lunch programs as part of the effort of national defense, actually. There was already a concern about the unfitness of young men to serve. This had been a big issue in World War I. And again, as the U.S. was gearing up for World War II, so many recruits turned up so malnourished and not fit to fight that this became a big concern. And this justified providing funds to feed school children lunch.
So it's always been a program that was designed to help kids and families who might not have enough to have food. It wasn't designed to be something that was just all schools are going to offer food, but most people are going to pay, but we'll subsidize those who can. I mean, this was really designed with an eye to helping kids who were not getting enough food to begin with.
Well, that was the local goal. Honestly, the school lunch program at the national level was primarily designed to help farmers. That it was really about keeping farm price supports up and having some justification for doing that. It became, of course, over time, much more complicated than that. But the really interesting thing is that it's always been an interconnected program with child nutrition as one goal and supporting American farmers as another goal. And it's a very strange, if you think about it, group of bedfellows. But that's how the program started. At the local level, and nationally too, within USDA, nutritionists and others advocated always for a universal program. They believed that school lunch should be provided to all students as part of their educational equipment, along with nutrition education, and that that should be funded by the federal government. So there was a debate from the very beginning, but the majority in Congress, when we come to passing the National School Lunch Act in 1946, didn't agree. And they were more concerned with having it be a program that would help poor children and, again, support farmers.
Rosie Krueger is here as well, Assistant Director of Child Nutrition Programs at the Agency of Education. And Rosie, moving it forward to today, why does the government still feel like, or you know, believe, at least through its implementation, that it makes sense to administer food policy through the schools? Why not expand WIC, the Women, Infants, and Children program, to, you know, older school children, or expand subsidies for families that are eligible for food subsidies? Why administer this food policy in our public schools?
Well, it is a federal program, and the Agency of Education administers it on the state level in Vermont. So I can't quite speak to what the feds are thinking when they decide to handle it this way. But
why not? I mean, you administer this on the state level, so you must know how the program works enough to know
Sure. Why
we do this as a country.
Well, it's a very prescriptive program. And so if we want the federal funds in Vermont, then we kind of need to follow those regulations. So we don't spend a lot of time in Vermont thinking about, you know, do we want this money or not? Because it's very helpful to feeding, you know, those 41,000 children a day who are eating school meals. But we do try to think, you know, within the constraints of this federal program, what can we do to make it fit our state better, to help our local food system, to make sure that our students are getting the best possible meal in the best possible way.
I want to push you one second,
sure,
though, because you work in food policy. So do you believe, you, Rosie Krueger, that we should be administering our food policy in the schools? And I ask you this because, you know, I've seen some conversation on some local messaging boards and elsewhere where there's a real question that people are asking, why are we doing this in our schools? Families should be responsible for feeding their children. And you should, you know, if your child is in school, you bring a lunch. And we do have policies in this country to assist people who don't have enough money to afford food with that. But in addition, we do this administration through schools. And I've been thinking about it because part of me is wondering, well, maybe it makes sense because most children, you know, ages 5 and up are in school every day. And so it's a really easy access point. It makes sense to administer these programs for kids who need food at the place where they're going to be during the day. On the other hand, people might say, no, just do it all in one place, you know, have your EBT card or whatever it is. So why do you think, I mean, do you think this makes sense and why?
Well, we know that when we feed meals to children in school, that the kid is getting the meal. The kid is getting a nutritious, well-balanced meal, and, you know, it is getting to the child. And so that's obviously a huge reason why we do it this way. And we also know that when kids don't eat, there are really significant impacts on both that child's ability to be educated and to learn and to sit still and to participate in class, and also on how their interactions impact the children around them. So if we didn't have school meals, if we were relying on, you know, other forms of food assistance to feed children, we would likely still have kids coming to school who hadn't eaten, and we would still need to deal with that issue because you can't have a starving child sitting in your class and learning. The hierarchy of needs and food is pretty high up there. And I think all of us can sympathize with, you know, if we skip lunch, we're not able to work at our best the rest of the day. And that is absolutely true of children. So, I mean, that's kind of the basic answer why we do it this way.
So in Vermont, you did mention that, you know, within Vermont, you're drawing down all of this federal money, but then trying to sort of not maneuver it. I don't mean, you know, that quite that explicitly, but you're trying to use these federal funds to work in the best way for Vermont. And that's coupled with state funds as well. So how strict are the parameters of the federal program, and how do you then sort of fit that into the Vermont way Vermont schools, Vermont kids?
Sure. So since 2012, with implementation of the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act, the meal pattern, which the food that needs to be on the tray for this to be a reimbursable meal that the federal government is willing to pay for, that has gone through a lot of changes. And so that is fairly prescriptive now, that the breads, the grain items are required to be whole grain rich, which means at least 50% of the grain in the item is whole grain and the rest is enriched flour. There has to be fruits and vegetables offered and a variety of vegetables. So not just red orange vegetables, not just, you know, tomato sauce, but also dark green vegetables.
Not just ketchup.
Not just ketchup. That is a little bit of a misnomer about the historic status of the program. But at this point, if you were going to try and offer ketchup as a vegetable, you need to offer at least a half a cup of it, which is a lot of ketchup.
That's my kids could eat a half a cup of ketchup.
So, but you need to have your dark green vegetables and your legumes and your so a variety of vegetables on the tray over the course of the week. And so the federal meal pattern is pretty prescriptive, but we're able to work within that to help our school food service managers in the state with a lot of scratch cooking. Several years ago, we published the Vermont New School Cuisine Cookbook in collaboration with some other partners. And that is a wonderful cookbook that's available for free online that has food service size recipes for schools that use a lot of local foods and use in-season foods here in Vermont, but also meet all those meal pattern requirements. So really encouraging folks to try those recipes.
Rosie actually sent along five sample trays from schools around Vermont, pictures of them. I wish they were five sample trays, but pictures of five sample trays of school lunches. And I put them out on Twitter, and we'll try to put them on our Facebook page as well for people who want to go online and see them. They do look very different than the school meals from when I was a kid, which you opened the tin foil. And I mean, we really did bounce the tater tots on the gym floor. I mean, this is not the same.
It is absolutely not the same. And I was eating school lunch in Vermont just 15 years ago, and I can't believe the difference now from when I was in school in Vermont. I eat a lot of school lunch now in my job. When I go out on reviews, I always take the opportunity to buy the lunch because it's the best deal in town. There's usually a full salad bar. There's all those fruits and vegetables, milk along with it. So it's a great meal, and we do some good stuff here in Vermont. The other piece you're asking about, how do we kind of work within those federal constraints to make this program fit really well for Vermont? Anor alluded to in the early days of the program, the federal government was purchasing surplus food, which was then distributing to schools. And we still have that piece of the program. It's called the USDA Foods Program. And at this point, most of the surplus food is actually diverted through the USDA Foods Program to food pantries. And so we do operate that program as well out of our agency. But there is still a significant component of the school meals program assistance that comes from USDA Foods. So about 20% of the value, the food cost that the schools have to work with usually comes in the form of food that the federal government is purchasing on behalf of the schools. And we've made a lot of changes to that program in Vermont over the past 6 years. I actually first came back to Vermont to work on making a lot of changes to that program. And so it's now a very demand-driven program where the schools get a dollar amount and they get to select from about 50 different items, and they say, we want to spend our dollar amount on these items. And then I take all those items and I roll them up into full truckload quantities and send those orders off to USDA, and USDA does the purchasing. So within that program, we're able to try and focus folks on some products that are maybe more regional. So the frozen wild blueberries that are available through the USDA Foods program, those all come from Maine. We really highlight that and encourage folks to purchase that. For a while, we were able to get Greek yogurt through the program that came from Commonwealth Creamery down in Commonwealth Dairy down in southern Vermont. They have recently stopped participating in the program, unfortunately, so we're no longer able to carry that item. But that was for a few years. We were actually taking this federal money and making sure that it was going to a local Vermont company. We try and work within the constraints of this kind of big bureaucratic federal program and make it fit Vermont.
And Nori, I mentioned the tater tots on the gym floor, and I was a kid who I didn't need a subsidy, but I did get school lunches. I mean, that was the way my family was able to function in the mornings. And there was a stigma. I remember, I mean, I was in school in Vermont and then in Massachusetts, and there was definitely a stigma attached to being a kid who got school lunches, regardless of whether you could pay for them or not. Is that still in existence, do you think, that there's a stigma attached to eating school food at all, let alone that question of whether your family can pay for it?
Unfortunately, I think the short answer to that question is yes. And that varies from school to school and kind of community culture to community culture to some degree within Vermont. And it's also not to say that the folks in our schools don't work really, really hard to try to mitigate that stigma, because they do. But interestingly, we partnered with the University of Vermont Department of Education recently to do a study of schools in Vermont that have been providing universal meals. In other words, breakfast and lunch at no charge to all students. And one of the really interesting and important things that they found in surveying staff who worked in those schools is the change in the culture that they saw within the cafeteria and within the school, where they reported declines in bullying and improved cafeteria culture and socialization in the cafeteria, in addition to more students eating school meals and improved behavior and reduced school nurse visits and things like that. And I think what that points to is a real challenge with this very important, very valuable nutrition program, which is that it is the one place in our schools where we do categorize children by their family's income in a pretty public way. And there are consequences to that. And I think there will always be some degree of stigma to a program that operates in this way. We don't do this with math textbooks. We don't do this with soccer balls for the playground, or even equipments for the chemistry lab.
But when you say they're stratified by income level, do you mean the kids who get school lunch versus the kids who don't? Because, I mean, I thought there have been a lot of steps taken to really make sure that the kids themselves in the lunch line are not being broken out by who can pay and who can't. You know, that's supposed to not be something that the kids themselves are dealing with. So, you know, if you have a deficit, you're not given a different meal, but your parent will certainly be told, you know, you owe money to the program. Or if you are somebody who's getting a free meal, there's no sign that says this one's free and the one next to you is, you know, the family paid for. So what do you mean that kids are still being broken up? And then, Rosie, I'll definitely come to you on that as well.
Yeah, well, no, you're right. So there are lots of systems that our schools have in place to not identify students based on whether or not they're receiving a free meal or a full pay meal. But that doesn't mean that the students don't know. So it's interesting to hear the kinds of conversations that students have with each other about their status if you're having lunch, as I also have had a lot of school lunches in Vermont, which are great. So, and families know too. And I think there's a lot of discomfort and shame about completing the school meal application for many families. And so there are also families who don't complete that application and students who aren't receiving the nutritional support that they need.
Go ahead.
Oh, just that I also think that to some degree there could generally be a stigma to eating the school meal if you're paying for it as well, as you said you experienced yourself. So I think all of that still goes on and is a kind of a fundamental flaw in the structure of the federal program.
And I know Anor is a supporter, and Hunger Free Vermont is a supporter of having universal free meals at all schools in Vermont. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But Rosie, you wanted to jump in here as well.
Yeah, so I would just say that it is, at this point, it's a program regulation that that children not be overtly identified. And that may be different from what some folks are remembering. You know, at various points over the years in the history of the program, kids have had different colored tokens or different colored tickets, or, you know, you've filled out envelopes that said what your status was on the front of them. And that's all gone away. So at this point, even the it's kept private enough that even the person who is taking the lunch count at the end of the line, the cashier, would not necessarily know the student status. So when we have electronic systems where a student has a PIN number or a card that they swipe, they're we go so far as to have a fake balance pop up on the screen for the free or reduced kids. So it's not apparent that they're not being charged for the meal. When there's paper rosters, the status of the students is kept separately in the office and not out there on the lunch line. So we do a lot to make sure that there is an overt identification. And that is really important to us as administrators of the program. And I would also say that when there's an increase in the quality of the school meals and you have more people eating, not because they have to eat the school meal, but because it's a nutritious and it's a good meal, then you see that start to slip away, that people want to eat the school meals and it's not just something that's there only as an option for the kids who don't have other options.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that, sort of picking up from that thread, because one of the things that school lunch policy is designed to do today, and at least in Vermont, is to also educate young people on nutritional value and how to eat in a healthy way. And so we're going to talk with a school nutrition administrator about that. And we'd love to take your calls and questions. We're hearing from people like Sprung 51, who says it's very important that we feed our children, but when you usurp the parents' duties, you're creating another generation without personal responsibilities. When are we going to realize that we're creating more harm than good? On the other hand, Mark says schools are the place to enact food policy for the same reasons they're the place to tender many of the social services that kids and families require. And among the reasons Mark lists are, kids are all supposed to be in school, the people you need to help are all in one place, and public schools are supported by tax dollars, and so the funding for such food programs comes from a more or less common pot. Shane on Twitter says, universal school meals eliminate stigma, make sure that every student has the food they need to learn and retain knowledge, and then couples that with farm-to-school efforts, and it ends up supporting Vermont farmers. Wins all around. Somebody wrote on our show page today to say, I work at a school in Washington County, and I'm saddened to see that the students receive highly processed foods loaded with sugar and high fructose corn syrup. I'm not sure how this is supposed to fit into a healthy and well-balanced diet. And Jess in Danby says that's an interesting historical connection between school meals and support by farmers. Wondering about the school meals and the Agency of Education and farm-to-school programs today. We're talking with Rosie Krueger, Assistant Director of Child Nutrition Programs at the Vermont Agency of Education, and Anora Horton, Executive Director at Hunger Free Vermont. And, you know, while we're talking about school meals, let's get the look from the inside with Kathy Alexander, Director of School Nutrition for both Mount Abraham Unified School District and the Addison Northwest School District, which is right next door. Hi, Kathy. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jane. Thank you. It's great to be on the show. I'm a huge fan, and thanks for having this important conversation.
Well, it's interesting to know about, especially, you know, if you're not somebody who has direct experience with school meals every day, just to learn about what's perhaps changed since some Vermonters were in school themselves, and you certainly know about that. Can you actually just describe, maybe today, what's a typical school lunch today in some of the schools that you cover?
Well, today was not that typical because it was a half day. So we actually did, it was quite a nice meal though. We did bag lunches for many kids because they're headed home early. But I'll give you an example from, perhaps tomorrow's meal. In most of our schools, we're having either a roast pork meal with, mashed potatoes, broccoli, and there'll be a whole grain. There'll be a dinner roll, a whole grain dinner roll. In some cases, those dinner rolls are homemade. In other cases, they're not, but they're a whole grain and really great, product. And then fruits and vegetables. And many of our schools also have, salad bars, or we call them fresh fruit and vegetable bars, because that's the main objective, is to expose kids with those, bars to lots of different varieties so they can make choices for themselves. So our meals, I think you'll find, are characterized by, as Rosie said, scratch cooking, and lots of fresh food, fruits and vegetables are highly emphasized. And there's lots of variety. I think we really see our mission, as kind of introducing kids to foods as much as possible, but also meeting their food preferences at the same time. So we're kind of doing a balancing act there.
Well, Kathy, while we have you on the line, let's go to Sean, who's calling in from Wethersfield, who I think may have a question that you'd be well positioned to answer. Hi, Sean. Go right ahead.
Oh, thank you, Jane. We love your show. I listen every day. We're sustaining members. Thanks for having this conversation. I'm the chair of the Wethersfield School Board, and we are right in the middle of trying to create an independent food service. And it turns out to be much more complicated than it was when my great-grandma was a lunch lady forever.
Hmm.
And so I've asked all of our board members and administration to listen today. But the question I have for you, it comes from students. There was a request by students in our school in Wethersfield to have better hot dogs. They don't like the ones that are made with turkey. And they were told that by FDA regulations, that was what was on the menu. And I feel that there's got to be a better way with, like, nitrate-free beef hot dogs.
Sean, you're clearly in a school, where the kids are like, I need better hot dogs. So let's go to Rosie and Kathy here. First of all, Rosie, what are the rules around hot dogs?
Sure. So there's certainly not a requirement that the hot dogs would only be turkey or that they have to have nitrates in them or anything like that. In fact, the requirements would be more around sodium levels. And so that's probably maybe what the management company there is struggling with. And Shane did allude that some schools in Vermont use a food service management company and contract that service out. And some schools are independently operated within the school, as Kathy's schools are. So that is a kind of an interesting difference to understand there. I'm sure Kathy has a good suggestion for a hot dog that the kids will like.
Kathy, what do you think?
I'm not sure you're going to like my suggestion, but we don't serve hot dogs in our schools. And maybe on a picnic day, we maybe have hot dogs in addition to hamburgers. But part of the reason is it's not the most nutritious food. And to be honest with you, our mission is to provide the most nutritious food. Now, as I said before, we balance that with student preferences, and that is a tough balancing act. In so many ways, I think it's important to understand that we see our role in schools very similar to the way teachers see their role in classrooms, that we have a standard to uphold. We have a curriculum that we want to promote to kids. And that curriculum is around, here's some great ways that you can keep your body and your mind healthy. And we're going to prepare them well for you and offer them to you so that you can make these good choices. And so that would be why hot dogs would not be one of the things that I would serve on a regular basis. Again, we do serve them occasionally at a picnic where it feels more appropriate. So I'm not sure if that's the answer you want to hear, but
or certainly not the kids.
Or maybe not the kids. But I would encourage, what I would do is sit down with those kids and say, look, here's for a couple reasons why hot dogs are kind of a every now and then food for us. And we'd like to talk to you about other ways that we can meet your food preferences and make things that you really love. And there is a world of food out there that kids adore that does not include hot dogs. So I guess that's the kind of conversation I'd have with kids in an effort to really both honor what they want and also help to educate them.
Well, Sean, I hope that helps at some level, at least. You know, you're not required to just do turkey, but Kathy says maybe find something else. So good luck with that. And let us know how it goes. We'd love an update on how it's working for you. Let's go to another call here from Mary Pat in Danby. Hi, Mary Pat.
Hi. After listening, I don't know if the regulations in Vermont are the same as New York State. I worked in New York State for 30-something years, and the lunches there in the elementary school were something that I would not eat. I would feel that I would be very unhealthy if I ever ate school lunch on a daily basis, or even once in a while. I never ate them. And is it the same in Vermont as in New York State? Because they would have breakfast for lunch and have pancakes and sausages, and they would have hamburgers. They would make the kids take an apple. Most of the kids ended up composting the apples unfortunately. But are they different between states, or are they federal guidelines?
Yeah, Mary Pat, before we get an answer to that, what time period are you talking about here? I think you worked for several decades in schools. When did you leave? So when was the last time you were?
I just retired in June.
Okay.
Retired in June, so I'm talking recent history.
Okay, so Mary Pat, looking recently here and saying, like, these are not meals that I would want to be eating every day. What's federal, and where do states have leeway?
The overall meal pattern regulations are federal, and you can serve a meal that isn't that appealing within the federal regulations. You know, they try and guide the school in the right direction, but certainly some schools and some states do better than others. We're pretty proud of the meals that our schools in Vermont are serving. Folks have really – the school food service managers have really taken it upon themselves to serve really healthy, nutritious meals within those regulations. And, you know, we've done a lot of training. We do a summer institute every year for our food service managers with a lot of cooking classes and meal pattern training. Kathy is actually one of our teachers for that and does a wonderful job for us every year. And we've also, you know, we had that cookbook, and we try to provide a lot of resources. And we see that in Vermont, a lot of school food service managers really take it as a point of pride to do a lot of scratch cooking. And within the small budget that schools have to prepare the meals, it's in total, including the USDA foods, about $3.70 that they have to produce each lunch. And that includes the USDA foods contribution that I was talking about before, the food that the federal government purchases, as well as either the federal subsidy or the state subsidy or funds that the parent pays for. So no matter what, you know, free, reduced, or paid meal, that's $3.71. So within that, different schools are able to do different things. And it depends on, you know, how much of an effort the school is making. But we think that in Vermont, we're very proud of the meals that our schools are serving.
And let's go to Molly, who's calling in from Norwich. Hi, Molly.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to provide the small business perspective on school meals, because I think it's an important perspective on this conversation. As a small investment firm in Vermont, we have funded efforts to expand school meals in Vermont for a few different reasons. The first is that we think they level the playing field for kids in Vermont schools, which is so important as we look to build a more inclusive economy where everyone benefits. But we continue to see dividends in the local food system, that when we're feeding all kids at schools, we tend to see greater sourcing in local foods, which helps local farms, local food businesses. And the last piece is one that we don't hear as much about, but we think is important, which is that feeding all kids at schools, we think, has workforce development benefits. That feeding kids at schools results in better educational outcomes, which strengthens our future workforce. It can also help attract and retain talent from outside of Vermont. And so I just think that, you know, as we think about school meals, we so often think about it from an education and a policy perspective, but I think there's real reasons for businesses to be paying attention to this issue and why it's so important.
Well, Molly, I appreciate your perspective. Thanks for hanging around to offer it and to think about how businesses might be involved in advocating for change. And Nora Horton, I know you want to talk about this. Let me get a couple more calls in here, because this is something that I think is getting the attention of listeners who have questions or thoughts on this. And Stacy is calling in from Granville. Hi, Stacy.
Hi there. Well, I was calling because certainly, you know, as a parent, I applaud and endorse all of these efforts to provide healthy meals. And I really resonated with me when one of your speakers there was mentioned thinking of it from the terms of education and a curriculum almost, and helping to teach kids how to eat more properly. And certainly I'm trying to do that myself too at home. But one of the sort of maybe pitfalls or whatever that I've run into, and I'm sort of wondering what the thoughts are, but in sort of both the efforts to try to provide, you know, meals that don't have a lot of processed foods or, you know, sodium, sugars, fried fructose corn syrup and all that kind of junk. And then also the efforts to reduce waste and, you know, not have so much food going just into the garbage or even into the compost. I discovered at the end of a whole year that my son had essentially been
eating nothing more than a little handful of raisins every day because he didn't think he cared for what they were offering.
Stacey, I'm going to grab your thoughts here to move forward on time, but I really hear what you're saying, and that's super interesting, and I think many parents can understand the challenge of not just having nutritional options for students and for kids, but actually getting them to eat them. And if they're in a situation where they're not under your supervision, you don't necessarily know what are they eating, how much are they eating, are they throwing stuff away, are they even taking the healthy options. And we have Kathy Alexander here, who's the director of school nutrition for two school districts in Addison County. And Kathy, I'm wondering what you say to parents like Stacy and how you address children like Stacy's kid.
Yeah, really great question, and something that we struggle with all the time. We definitely, in our schools, we're looking at very high participation, which we're very proud of. But there are definitely certain meals that we try hard for kids to like or want to take, and so we do a variety of things. And one is we do some taste testing, and we really try to encourage kids. We also have some alternate meals that we try to kind of downplay the alternate meals, but our mission is to make sure kids are well fed. So we have that as an option for kids who really don't like the whatever's offered on the main meal. So we're paying close attention to kids eating. But I think the other thing that I'm hearing in that question is a bigger issue, and that has to do with the way that school meals are integrated into the school community and into the school day. And some of the reality of having the opportunity to eat meals is that kids don't always have time. And we don't have a lot of control over that. So we are, I think there needs to come a time where we start to address the ways in which school meals programs are better integrated into school and the school day and the educational day in terms of the way we schedule meals and the way we optimize those meals to optimize good nutrition with regard to timing, amount of time kids have. So I think that really, really plays a big role in the amount of food kids are able to eat and then, of course, waste.
Yeah, and
it's a process of education to me, educating kids, and also working with schools to really integrate this important part of the educational day so that it works well for everybody.
Yeah, Stacey, I'm not sure that fully, answers your question of how to make sure that your child is actually eating enough, even if offered enough options. But I appreciate, Kathy, you bringing in that question of timing, because we often hear from students that they feel so rushed at lunch that they don't have enough time to actually eat all their food or to sort of sit and eat in a way that I think, many schools would like to model this idea of enjoying your food and seeing it as a social occasion. And that's so difficult. I want to ask a little bit about cost and the idea that is floating out there. And Anora, I know you're a proponent of it, of making school lunches and maybe even school breakfasts universally free. So all students would be able to access them. And Anora, you were talking earlier about stigma and, how that sort of feeds into this whole issue of school lunches. But why do you think that it would be worth the price tag for Vermont to be offering free meals to all students?
Well, I think that a couple of your callers or emailers pointed to a couple of these things. So Molly calling in and saying, this could be a way, bringing back that farmer kid connection, actually, and talking about the way that this might support local foods and also could really support our workforce development. And then the other caller earlier who talked about whose responsibility is it, and what about the personal responsibility of families? And that's a very valid question, and it's one that's been asked since the very beginnings of the program, to get back to our history at the early part of this show. But I would say that there is a lot of personal responsibility here, and the personal responsibility of the student is to learn. That's the job of our young people. And it's actually our collective personal responsibility to make sure they have the tools that they need to learn. And we do that really well with a lot of things in school, but we don't do that well with food. And all students need good nutrition to learn well. No student should learn about hunger at school. And we have the evidence, I think, that shows that we could reap incredible rewards, including economic rewards, down the road in our state if we provided meals as part of school and were able to do the integrating that Kathy was talking about earlier of true nutrition education into our schools for all kids.
Rosie Krueger, what would that cost? I think something like 74 Vermont schools offer universal meals in their individual schools, but to do that statewide?
So the 74 who are doing it are the ones who are able to work within the federal programs where it makes economic sense based on something we have called the community eligibility provision that's only available to the lowest income schools.
That's the schools that have the high proportion of students who are already getting free and reduced price meals.
And we're so excited to see those schools doing it, but for the other schools who aren't participating in that, it's because it would require a very high local contribution. And we crunched the numbers statewide and found – I shouldn't say – this is a very back of the napkin estimate. We have not spent a lot of time. But we think it could cost around $50 million for the state to take that on. And that's not to say that that's not something we should do. You know, I come to work every day to feed kids. But that's a huge policy decision that in a commitment that the legislature would need to make. So it's a wonderful thing to hope for. But we also need to understand that that would have a big impact on a bunch of other programs that do rely on the free and reduced data that we gather through this program. So it would have some very large impacts, and it would be a very big conversation to be having.
Well, the joy of that is that now we all in the state, everybody who's heard this, has a little bit of a baseline to have a better understanding of how the school meals program works, where the money comes from. And so maybe that conversation can start from a slightly more educated platform when and if we have that more robust conversation about offering free meals to all Vermont students. I so appreciate all three of you being here. Kathy Alexander is Director of School Nutrition for the Mount Abraham Unified School District and the adjacent Addison Northwest. Rosie Krueger is Assistant Director of Child Nutrition Programs at the Vermont Agency of Education. And Anora Horton is Executive Director at Hunger Free Vermont. Thanks very much to all three of you.
It's great to be here.
Thank you so much. Bye, Jane.